Hi folks, a little bit of housekeeping before we start the podcast. As you're aware, we rely on you guys to pay it forward. This podcast goes out free, obviously, but just because it's free doesn't mean it doesn't have a value. How you can support us is by joining us at patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Maybe even press pause now and click the link and see if there's a level that you think is worthwhile chipping in at. It's really appreciated. It's the only way we keep these podcasts going. And for that, there's a ton of extra content. And I'm not just saying that to try and entice you, but even in the last few days, we've had podcasts with João Pina from the Portuguese government, who stepped out of the budgetary process to give me a half an hour of his time to let us know how things are going there and how their economy is actually outperforming Ireland's, despite the fact that we're told that the left can't lead. There's also a conversation with Raise the Roof on what's happening across the country in terms of meetings and organising in the housing situation. And the supply guy, self-identifying supply guy, Sean Keyes from The Currency, joined me in studio to discuss his defense of Built to Rent. And you know, we took a lot of heat now from listeners over it already. Our patrons have heard it, and he's getting a bit of heat, I'm getting a bit of heat, so I hope that maybe gives you an idea of the conflict with a small c that occurred. And there's lots more coming, there's lots more up there, and you get one consolidated feed without these inserts where I have to ask you for the support. Last time, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. I'll let you enjoy the podcast now. Thank you.
Hello, welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and yet again, I am on my own. Martin, he did one podcast this week, so I suppose one out of 15 isn't too bad. He is on the mend, though, bless him. And you've probably seen him on social media as cranky as ever. We've a lot coming this week, so I would ask you, though, to maybe check out the podcast we did earlier with the Shannon Arms residents in Limerick, and see if you can lend some support to their petition to try and stop the mass eviction, which it is a mass eviction, even if there are various landlords. I don't care how it's phrased. It's coordinated. It's not coincidental. And and if you have a problem with that, Pat McDonough, you know how to get to me. Anyway, enough about that and me get myself in more trouble. There's an old saying, and I can't, maybe one of my guests will tell me who said it, but it says, there's no money in art. But then again, there's no art and money. And I often think of that when I think about when we talk about how we discuss cultural capital, particularly in Dublin, the city. And because we always say, you know, we produce all these great artists and all of these great books and novels and writers and singers and painters and artists. But continuously we fail the arts. And it's with that in mind, I am delighted to be joined by two of the artists who are members of the Richmond Road Studios, which if you were paying any attention on social media, you would have seen I'm going to call it a nasty letter saying that basically dismissing the concerns of the artists, the people who literally are creating in this space and have been, I think, under various guises since around 2002 by Dublin City Council, effectively by the people who are supposed to be in charge of this, because of course, as usual, the city is pushing in on gentrification and economy over culture. I am joined by, to discuss this, I'm joined by a painter, Maeve Brennan, and sculptor, Adam Gibney. And apologies to both of you, because I've basically shortened your bios because I've gone on too long already. Maeve and Adam, thanks for talking to me.
Hey, how's it going?
Hiya.
Maeve, we might start with the fact that tweet that I referred to where the letter was put up, it reminded me, and I think we said this before we came on air, of the letter that came from Owen Keegan famously to UCD students and Rory Power in the Students Union about basically build your own homes if you're struggling for student accommodation. I refer to it online as, you know, beyond disdain. When you looked at that, how did you feel, and what did it say to you as an artist?
I was quite shocked, to be honest with you. There was no empathy. It just seemed very, very hard. I felt very, very clearly the difference between my life and Richard Shakespeare's life, you know, and like the lives of creative people in the city, as opposed to the people who are kind of attempting to manage the creative end of the city. You know, it's vastly different, but no attempt to kind of breach the gap, you know. And I kind of felt that he could have handled it in so many different ways. Like all you needed to do was to come down and meet us, you know, or to give a date for a meeting. And it just seemed, to be honest, it seemed like a power play. And it seemed that he was the person in control of all the information, all of the power. And rather than kind of trying to meet us in the middle or generate a win-win situation, he just was kind of cut us down to a shred. It was also very patronizing, very disrespectful. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that anybody would write an email like that from a work account and somebody who's a civil servant. I thought it was shocking.
Yeah. We'll probably link to it in the post, but I don't want to labor the point too much. But it tells us a story of how the role of art, the arts are seen in many eyes. And unfortunately, we see that come to the surface too often when it comes to these situations. Adam, if I could come to you though, how long have you been using the Richmond Road Studios yourself? I know, as I said, they were on the go since 2002, but like, how long have you been part of the I was going to call it the community down there?
Well, it definitely is a community. I've been there for around 8 years now, maybe a little bit more. I think it's really important to say that it's a community, because that's what artists need. Even if I find a shed to work from, it's not going to be the same as working with people who are all kind of struggling in the same industry and trying to network and work.
Yeah, I like when you talk about that, though, like, isn't it funny the last week we've seen so much people saying, you know, there's a hidden cost of 200 million of work from home. We need people back in the offices, which has been led predominantly by commercial property owners who want to maintain the values of that. They want it. But they will say to you that one of the reasons we want people in offices, because, you know, the ideas are better, the workflow is better. And you're in a creative space, Maeve, where there's other artists, there's creatives, there's people sitting around. And, you know, surely that's the sort of same logic applies there, that this is where work can actually feel like it's validated, and the flow of that energy, that creative energy, is much more productive. Or am I just trying to use their economic model against them?
I think it's for everything. Like Adam said, it's a community. And I think, maybe I'm kind of wrong, but I think if you're in a different line of work, you tend to be, even if you're working from home, you're still tapping in with other people, even if it's emailing or whatever, you tend to be part of a team anyway. Yeah. When you're in your studio, it's very solitary. The work itself is very, very solitary, unless you're collaborating with somebody, which most people don't really. You're in there on your own. So I think that you need that. Like, even if you're not even discussing art, even if it's just nonsense, you know, to kind of know that there's other people there, or if you get a rejection, to kind of go out and say, oh, so-and-so rejected me and the other person did too, or, you know, it's that kind of a thing. Hmm. But I think for me anyway, I did some work at home during some of the lockdowns. And up until that point, I didn't kind of realize just how important the studio is, because I kind of felt like I was going a bit batshit crazy, to be honest with you, because you're kind of in your own world. You don't have any remove. You don't get to remove yourself from it. You don't get to see anybody else. You're kind of just in a bit of a vacuum, and it can be very lonely as well, you know? So that's what really brought it home to me, how important being in the studio is, and the community of that.
And,
you know,
and like, as I said, there's 18 artists now being impacted. Like, Adam, you really are on the clock. It's 31st of August is the date. Like, what does that mean in terms of you having to, if this comes to pass, you having to move off site somehow and start again? Like, you said a shed there a minute ago, and, you know, the visions in my head are like, when sitting in a little room like I am currently and trying to do that work, which is, you know, it's a big difference between sculpture and me going on Zoom.
Yeah, it's actually like, although we do talk about the need for community, for me at the moment, the viability of my career is completely put into question, or if I can even stay in Dublin. So I can't really work from a shed, in that I have like a workshop setup. So I work a lot with like electronics, with 3D printers, like painting, CNC, a lot of different stuff. And also Richmond Road it's actually very affordable. It's one of the last affordable studios in Dublin. So for a couple of years, I was lucky enough to say to people, I'm a full-time artist and I can kind of survive off that. But the big kind of, I've been calling it like a peasant privilege, was that I've had access to a cheap studio, and I also had access, I was also renting in an affordable place, which is now gone as well, that all of a sudden, it's not just a case of finding a shed. It's like, is my life even viable? And I'm actually lucky enough to work quite a lot. So it just feels like the end of an era for a lot of people in the studio. I know I'm not the only one who feels like that.
That's, folks, if you're listening to that, like, think about that. Imagine thinking this is what you've poured your heart into and thinking that there's an end of an era coming because the capitalist class, I'm going to say, is pushing in because they want to change the property usage as these things happen. And the idea, why I thought it was important to say that it kind of kicked off in 2002, but it changed hands in 2014, I think, was when the sale took place. And then, you know, since then, people sit on assets and they wait and they see how they value. And Maeve,
well, the studio hasn't been sold. It didn't change hands. I don't know if you thought that it had.
Oh, sorry. No,
it has never changed hands. We have always had the same landlord. But what happened in around, I think it was 2014, was the building went up for sale, but it was never sold. So this is where we're at, where we're now answerable to a receiver. Mm. So that's where we're at, yeah. So it has never changed hands.
Oh, I apologies. I thought the receiver had, and again, something I'm familiar with, the receiver had assumed responsibility for 2014 and had simply sat on it to this point. But nonetheless, I know you've had bailiffs called, you've had, you know, all of this put to you. But we always remember tell me I'm mad, but did you ever hear Emmett Kirwan's poem Temple Bar, July 2019, where he talks about the sort of the last times you're able to be in Temple Bar, because during when the crash happened, it was more affordable to be back in these creative spaces. It was more affordable for artists to take these areas back and actually start working, and they were being pushed out. And I think there's a great line in that poem where he says, Dublin, you're not dead yet. And Adam, what you're talking about there strikes me very much, that in terms of some of the creative spaces, it feels very much like some of the last ones are being taken back. Can I ask you, Maeve, on a personal note though, do you feel that, you know, you've gotten enough support? I mean, we see all these things at the moment, the basic income for artists coming off, there's these new project schemes. Have you, are they just putting a better face on it? And is it still yet again back to a situation whereby ultimately, you know, the money has gone to trump the creative side of, and particularly the gentrification areas of Dublin, and Richmond Road is sort of a good location?
I think, look, the basic income for the arts is amazing. You know, like that's fantastic. But I think that the whole landscape has changed an awful lot, and I just don't really know. First of all, I don't think that the general public, unless they're involved in some way with the creative sector, unless they have friends or family members within it, kind of are aware of just how kind of hard it has become. And, you know, yeah, you've got the basic income for the arts and it's fantastic.
But it's only a project. It doesn't, I think. It's
only a pilot, yeah. At the same time, you know, artists also need workspaces. So the two issues are kind of combined. Do you know that sort of a way? Mm. Like there's some artists that can't possibly work outside of a studio space, Adam being one. I can work away on smaller paintings at my kitchen table. It's a bit miserable. Mm. It's not a long-term solution, but it kind of seems that other stuff that was being done, I was listening in on the meeting that was held yesterday in the civic offices, and they were talking about the work that has been done. So studio spaces have been earmarked, but they're kind of for meanwhile use. You know, that's not really... They're earmarking a number of premises, but they're for what they call meanwhile use or temporary use. Hmm. So there's no future in them, you know, so you could offload, like even for us, let's say, if we manage to get another space and we move it to another building and we have it for a year. I mean, it's certainly better than nothing, but the year passes and then we're being presented with the same issue, you know. And then I think the other issue is that these new spaces will all be supported by Dublin City Council, which you know, is great. But back in the day, you'd have your spaces supported by Dublin City Council, but there would have been a lot of studio spaces like ours. So people might rock into Temple Bar Studios and they'd get a 3-year contract. They dip back into our spaces when that contract ended. Mm. Whereas there's nowhere left for artists to dip back into that's affordable. You know, you're talking about maybe €350 a month and up. So it's kind of a problem, and it just feels like the problem has been building for years. Like, this isn't just a crisis that developed overnight. It's been brewing for years, and it feels like it was kind of allowed to fester and allowed to become a crisis. And I find that very frustrating.
And I want to remind people like that even between the four city councils in Dublin, I think they control enough, sort of, even if we were just say between derelict and zoned and unzoned, more land than Andorra, right? So there's a lot of opportunities in that where we could actually have permanent places, permanent locations. And that's not to say that's to take away from this struggle right now, but just shows that we don't ever have any permanent planning when it comes to the creative spaces. You know, they're building O'Devany Gardens and they say we'll have a community center. It's this kind of mentality that comes into it. Adam, you referenced though not being able to have a future in Dublin. The really difficult thing, and I know this from many people who I know who have actually effectively left Dublin over the last number of years in the arts, is the idea that the city is losing that creative space, that creative vibe. And you know, we have to look at what happened with the cobblestone and put up a hotel. Do you feel that the city just is unaffordable and is you will be forced to leave if this comes to pass?
Yeah, most definitely. I've been thinking of that for a while. What I've been doing in the meantime, though, is I've taken on a mammoth amount of work and projects and lecturing and technician just to try and keep up with the, say, housing rent and what's going to happen with the studio. And it's now I think, and a lot of creative people are doing this, they're just constantly burned out. Like, yeah. 6 days is normal, but a lot of the time I work just 7 days a week. And this is a love, but it shouldn't be that difficult for someone who's constantly working. And I think I'm not alone in that. It's getting very, very difficult to see why you'd even stay. Like, why am I going to stay here? I have to work every day, essentially. It's a tricky one.
Well, your story is not unique, and that's an issue whereby we see this where people who and you want to do what you love, and the cost of living and it's not a new thing. You know, that's what drives me mad. We've discovered this hashtag cost of living crisis, but most people have been living it for years up until now. We just didn't really mind so much until it hit a certain income class, and then it became an issue because it became a political topic. Maeve, can I kind of ask you for, I know this sounds terrible, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but if I made you the art czar for 48 hours, and you had the opportunity to fix situations like the Richmond Road Studios, what would you ideally like to change if you could, and what would you see as a way to give artists protections?
Well, to be honest with you, I'd like to see a big, substantial gesture from Dublin City Council that isn't the piecemeal, and I hate even saying that, because you don't want to sound like you're disregarding, because obviously a lot of work has gone into that, and you don't want to sound that you're dismissing other people's work either. But the thing is, it is very piecemeal. It isn't long-term solutions. I'd like to see Dublin City Council buy a substantial building over one that they've already have and upgrade it and provide studio spaces for not just 10 artists or 15 artists or 20 artists, but to make it for at least 100 artists, 150 artists, you know, in a big gesture, and have it secure. And maybe as well, this kind of contract, this 3-year contract thing, if people could have more longevity, you know, if they can prove and promote that they're using the spaces and that they're active. I don't really understand this whole reshuffle thing that happens. You know, I get, you know, wanting to be fair and give people a chance. Like, maybe it could be a case that if you have a position within one Dublin City Council studio that you can swap to one that's maybe closer to home, or if your circumstances change. But I don't understand this kind of conveyor belt of you've got 3 years and then you leave. Where do you go? And then you go through the whole process again. The application process as well seems to have become really, really tough. Like if you're doing budgets and proposals and interviews and presentations, you know.
Hang on, because our listeners won't be aware of any of that. So you have to go through effectively a bureaucratic endeavors to fill out the forms, interviews.
You do. And, you know, and it makes sense. Like, obviously, there has to be some sort of a process and there has to be some sort of system in place. And I don't think anybody is in disagreement with that. But it just seems like there's these 10 new spaces up in Artain and you have to do a number of interviews. You have to submit budgets and proposals. And it just seems, it just seems crazy. It's like you're applying for a solo exhibition, you know, where you'd be planning things maybe 2 years in advance and you would be, you know, aware that you need to plan, you need to know the amount of works, you need to know whatever, but now you need to know just to have a studio space to do your work in.
Like, I mean, like that's that. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. That's a head scratcher for me. I can understand, again, all of these things have to be, there's always a paper trail. People have to, you know, there has to be some sort of code of conduct for people. You can't just go into a space and go up and start shaving Adam's head, even though I want to currently, but we, you know, folks, don't worry. I have envy. Okay. The man has a perfect head of hair on him. Like Adam, same sort of idea to you though, if you don't mind. If there's anything beyond what Maeve said, what would you ideally want to see, whether it be from Dublin City Council area or from indeed the state and Minister Catherine Martin? If I said to you here, you've got 24 hours, tell me what you do, go for it.
I think it would be all. Definitely. Well, if you look at the city council, I think there needs to be like drastic kind of policy change implemented. So I may have mentioned the meanwhile use kind of buildings, but they're kind of invisible. And I know that, like we've been talking about, if you're applying for a studio, there's this kind of process. But and Richard Shakespeare in his letter called for the open and transparent kind of action. But looking at the meanwhile use buildings, I know the lads from Give Us the Night were inquiring about that Chapman Row building, and that's gone to press of the hoteliers, and they're paying a very minimal kind of rent. I think that's the kind of policy change I'd want to look at, like how our cultural institutions that put a lot of work in not getting pre-sent ahead of people like that. I think if I was looking at a governmental level, I think the crisis people aren't even talking about. Like I graduated 10 years ago, so I'm kind of lucky. I graduated in the recession. There were spaces everywhere. The generation coming behind me, I don't know where they're going. I think they're just going to like disappear. There's like no starter galleries, no starter project spaces. Very hard to get funding. Like in 10 more years, we're just going to look back and go, where did a lot of the artists go? They either went to London or Berlin or got like sucked into a job. I think there needs to be like a serious kind of look at how to support the people who are just graduating now and how to sustain like a vibrant art community, whether that's like music or visual arts or theater, that we need to protect that because it's literally going to disappear on us.
It's a really good point around that generation. And Maeve, I know I saw you nodding your head there, but I just think it's something that that we've seen so often, that whereby we pull the ladder up. But it's funny because the art spaces thrive when things come down. You know, the spaces were available, as you said, you came out into a bad economy, but that meant that there was availability. Now the rents are through the roof, they're looking at all these buildings. And I want to also remind listeners that people are going to say, well, like, you know, we need, this is going to be taxpayers' money. This is going to be, you know, the state's going to have to spend money. We currently have a plan right now to subsidize apartments in Dublin, €144,000 per apartment to developers per apartment, folks, that just to maintain those prices. Tell me that the arts aren't worth investing in rather than giving them to Canadian pension funds. Please tell me. I dare you to. Sorry, Maeve, I know you wanted to, you were nodding the right way when Adam was talking.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, I was, because one of our studio members, Holly, made a very good point. She was sort of saying that she worried that even the nature of work that's going to be produced in Art College might change, because if there's nowhere to house that work, if people can't see that work being able to be carried on in an appropriate space, people might end up sort of nearly subduing their work or what it is that they want to do to move it into something that's more workable. And I think that's a horrendous thought. If you see young graduates who should be full of energy, full of ambition, you know, kind of downsizing ideas and projects because they don't have the space to make them in. And I think it's potentially really, really serious.
Yeah, no, to put that in context, we see some of the best people who've come out of these areas, and then to go to Adam's point, they end up being told, actually, your main skill is to try and sell advertising space in a creative way. And we don't want them doing that. We want them actually being creative and producing things that are thought-provoking. The last thing I want to cover is around the aspect of cultural capital, because, you know, 150 artists approximately have gone through Richmond Road Studios, maybe more. You know, the work that comes through, it has a benefit to society, has a benefit to us all. But politicians themselves aren't ever shy of queuing up to join the successful one. They want to go to that exhibition launch. They want to go to the play that someone's written. They want to sing someone's praises. And they want to spend your cultural capital. They just don't want to invest in it. Can I ask you first, Adam? Like you've said, you've been working a lot. When you're putting out pieces now, do you feel like that there's a value attached to it, or are you literally working to live rather than living to work?
I think at the moment, like I am lucky that I'm in a position to be invited to make work in a lot of places, and given a better kind of economic stability, I could probably enjoy that a lot more. But unfortunately, this year I took on maybe too much side hustling, as in lecturing and research projects and stuff like that. I do think that the cultural capital is kind of gas. Like I've been in, like if you bring your art outside of Ireland, there is Culture Ireland who are going to fund you. And it is very much a marketing thing. Like, let's market Irish art abroad. And that goes through the Department of Tourism as opposed to the Department of Art and the Gaeltacht, and I forget all the rest of the names behind it. But when you do something like that, it's very funny to see like your ambassadors and stuff like that very happy to come along and get their photo, and you might have some cheese and butter there. And it's just an advertisement that Ireland can kind of see itself as this cultural capital. But like, it's what's going to happen, I fear, in a few years is that the only people involved in creating culture are going to be upper middle class white people. And it's going to be really kind of a boring advertisement because it's not going to be the conversation that people want to have.
It's and again, I know I keep digressing, but it's actually happened in the US. You see it more and more, even in something like journalism, which has been fundamentally undermined in terms of pay scales, whereby you need to almost have a parents who can say he's a journalist and we can bankroll part of his income because he can't make do on that. Sorry, Maeve, the same idea to you. And actually, you know what? I want to put it differently to you. Even the idea of saying cultural capital is a bit neoliberal, isn't it? It's a bit commodifying it anyway, you know.
Yeah. Well, for me, my situation is a little bit different to Adam in that I work full time. Well, I've just reduced my hours in my job. I work in an unrelated field. I'm also a social care worker. And I suppose I kind of got into social care because I wanted to fund my studio and I wanted to have a job that I could have an income from. So I kind of got into it because of that. But like that, you know, there are a lot of artists that are working full time and not always in related areas. And it's really hard because you feel constantly stretched all of the time. You know, you're trying to do your job. You're trying to get into the studio. Your days off aren't proper days off. You have the kind of sense of, you know, you're living two different lives almost. And it can be really, really, really hard, you know. And then when all of this kicked off, we've all spent so much time on this and so much, it's been so stressful. And then you kind of find that, you know, you sit down to do a bit of work and you realize that you're fighting for this and we've gotten an extra 4 months, but you're not even able to take advantage of that time because you can't relax and you're trying to do all this other stuff, you know. And yeah, it's really, really hard, you know. It's really, really hard.
And just I suppose if it can be, obviously, first of all, folks, I should have said this at the outset. There is an uplift petition. The link is in the bio. So before you start listening to me, just hit stop and go and make sure you support that. What else are you calling for? Apart from being treated with some bloody respect for a start.
Well, we're asking Dublin City Council to honour the emergency motion that was passed. Richard Shakespeare said in the meeting yesterday that he is honouring that and that our situations with the city valuers. But another commitment that was made at the emergency motion was that they would support us to find another alternative building if needs be. And even if they were to buy our building, it would still need to be upgraded to the health and safety standards that Dublin City Council would require. So we will need an alternative building regardless of what happens. And we're kind of working in the dark because we were trying to figure out, like, what do Dublin City Council want from us here? Do they want us to source the building? What would the budget be? Are they willing to help us with this? Kind of practical questions that we'd like answers to. And that, I suppose, I would like a practical plan in place to know where we're going here, you know, because it just feels like we're sort of at the mercy now of a group of people who aren't telling us where we're going. So we're kind of working in the dark.
And again, that is very clear from the outset, that letter that you referred to. It was very much to tell you about the power dynamic. And it does feel very much like we don't actually have to answer your questions. was the tone of it. And if you do have a protest planned in June, is it?
Yeah, we've got a protest planned at the civic offices at 4 p.m. on the 13th of June. It'll be kind of a case of just bringing your art along. It'll be colourful. It'll be entertaining. We have one of the studio members, Louise, her band Acid Granny will be there. And whoever wants to come, everybody is welcome. And we're going to move from there to City Hall to coincide with the meeting of Dublin City Council. So we'll probably base ourselves there for a substantial period of time, but it should also be fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And do, folks, again, sign the petition, sign the support, and show nothing actually does better than feet on the street. You know, if you can get feet on the street, that they will sit up and take attention. Maeve Brennan and Adam Gibney, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. I genuinely hope people will support this. I suppose generally we need to do so much more. And I'm going to be really troublesome and say that I feel that there's also, it's going to get tighter because we're seeing now talk of recession has been spoken about today for the first time, and all of those things now are starting to be kicked up again. And whether you believe it or not, this is where it starts then, because, you know, we were having conversations the last few days about, are we paying people too much on social welfare? They won't take jobs in hospitality. And now you see this, but always things like the arts suffer immediately and often. We need to be very cognizant of this, because it doesn't work. It actually leaves us with, as Adam says, a lost generation, and we will lose out on the art that never gets created. And that's a tragedy. That's a national tragedy. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow. I'm off to Cork to chair the Cork Life Centre. Have asked me to chair a round table debate for students. So I'm looking forward to that. But we're also recording with a couple of wonderful traveller activists in terms of the mental health and traveller day outside the Dáil on the 31st of May, where I'll be, and I hope to see lots of you there as well. Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.